Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Unjust Sacrifice by J. Clifton Slater. Narrated by P.J. Oakland. Act 1. The year before, the rains were moderate, almost as if Neptune and Jupiter reached an agreement to allow shipbuilders clear skies for their work. From sites around the Republic, newly constructed quinquiremes rode into the port of Ostia. In waves weeks apart, the warships arrived at the naval facility. This was a blessing, as the final equipment could be installed one ship at a time, but also a curse. The trickling in of ships left the inexperienced crews and commanders without ships for hands-on rowing drills. Greeting the new ships of war was a flourishing town on the banks of the Tyrrhenian Sea. Making up the temporary citizenship of the area were skilled craftsmen and suppliers. The other occupants consisted of newly recruited oarsmen and fresh from training legionaries, their optios and centurions. Few of the military groups were properly indoctrinated and incorporated into the fleet as seagoing centuries. When Carthadosh raiders were spotted near Pompeii, the Senate ordered fleet praetor Zelare Sudoris to launch all the warships he could, and to send 4 centuries of infantry south to act as a quick reaction force against an invasion. He complied, although the actions stripped away his rowing instructors and veteran legionaries. While severely hampering the training of new crews, the actions did secure the Republic's coastline from Admiral Hannibal Gisco's probes. Then the agreement between the God of the Sea and the Sky Father fell apart, and storms raged. Every shipyard turned to mud, wooden beams swelled, and men struggled to see their work through the deluge. The steady delivery of the Republic warships ended with the downpours. Welcome to 260 BC. Chapter 1. Winter Quarters. Admiral Hannibal Gisco spread the robe over his legs to block the winter breeze. Tempted to leave the roof and go below, he didn't. Under him, the 2 floors of the building were filled with administrators for his fleet and General Hamilcar's army. Should Hannibal appear in the building, the supreme military commander for Sicilia would be inundated with requests. After the fruitless excursion to the coast, trying to draw a reaction from the Republic, Hannibal just wanted to sit and enjoy the view.
"Admiral, I hate to bother you,"
Fleet Lieutenant Boodes called from the stairs.
"Then don't," Gisco shot back.
Before Boodes was fully turned to descend the steps, the Admiral thought better.
"Please excuse me. I'm just feeling grumpy. What do you need, Senator?"
While serving as second-in-command for the Carthadosh fleet in the Sicilia region, Boodes, thanks to his powerful family, was also a sitting legislator on the Carthadosh Council.
"I don't blame you, sir," the fleet lieutenant commiserated. "I too assumed the Republic would respond with an attack in Sicily, prompted by your provocation."
"We rowed warships back and forth along their coast, showing sailcloth and our butts," the Admiral complained. "And in all that time, we accomplished nothing. What do you need?"
"I am afraid I am about to add to your winter malaise, Admiral," Boodes warned.
"Baal grants Earth a time to rest before spring,"
Hannibal Gisco reflected.
"If only our commanders in Carthadosh allowed for the same respite. What do you need?"
A loud, coarse voice, roaring from the floor below, erupted from the stairwell and burst over the roof deck.
"That, sir,"
Boodes confirmed when he saw the pained look on Hannibal's face.
"Colonel Bayoth."
Most of Hannibal Gisco's mercenary commanders bathed and changed into robes of their native clothing before coming to his headquarters. The Gallic officer never did.
"Admiral,"
We came when got a dashed coat,
the colonel growled upon reaching the roof.
My Gauls stood with Admiral Anno Gisco during the toughest of battles, but when we left for home, he left us unpaid. Things are shifting, and come spring, you'll need my fighters. Or maybe the Republic could use us.
The creases at his eyes twitched before Hannibal forced his face into a passive expression. Having a mercenary commander threaten to go over to the enemy was as close to treason as actually marching across a battle line. Bayoth's threat could not go unanswered.
Colonel, as you know,
Hannibal began. Then he stopped and studied the wild beard and unwashed hair of the Gaul.
You and your men have proven yourselves in every engagement. Because of your abilities, I'd like to make you an offer. Partial pay,
the colonel scoffed.
We'll take our full pay and not a gold coin less.
Admiral,
Boores added.
What did you say?
Bayoth demanded.
His title is Admiral or Lordship,
the lieutenant stated.
When speaking to a superior officer, it is customary to use a formal address.
Listen here, sailor. I've been carving up men since before you were born,
Bayoth informed the naval officer.
I don't need you to teach me manners.
Where most Carthadosh nobles wore an ornate knife but traveled with bodyguards, Boodes had no men-at-arms. Rather, he carried an additional blade. Lieutenant Boodes dropped his hand to the hilt of the sword. The admiral watched as Boodes touched the hilt of a Carthage battle sword, and Bayoth dropped back to clear distance for his Gallic sword. Both weapons had swollen bellies, but one was single-edged with a sharp point, and the other sported a double-edged blade with a narrowing tip. Hannibal Gisco had seen both blades take limbs and lives. For a heartbeat, he thought to let young Boodes end his problem with the Gaul. But then the admiral remembered Senator Boodes' family. An inquisition if Colonel Bayoth killed the nobleman would not end well. Explaining that his fleet lieutenant died in a rooftop brawl presented problems the admiral did not need.
Gentlemen, please,
Hannibal Gisco insisted. He held up both hands in a sign of peace.
I need you both. You had an offer in mind, Admiral,
Bayoth remarked while giving a hard look towards Boodes.
I don't have your coins yet,
Hannibal admitted.
But I plan late in the summer to move in and reoccupy Agrigento. And that has what to do with me and my guys?
Bayoth questioned.
I need a force in Chanchana,
Hannibal informed the Gaul.
It's 16 miles northeast of Agrigento. The perfect position to defend my rear when the Republic comes for me. You want us to work for you without pay?
Bayoth asked in disbelief. A youthful senior officer appeared at the top of the stairwell and a cross look passed over his face. General Hamilcar, commander of the Carthadosh ground forces in Sicilia, didn't care for most of his mercenaries. And for the Gallic colonel, he reserved a special place in his bile. Once the sour expression left, he approached the three men.
Admiral, sorry to interrupt,
Hamilcar announced.
Chanchana has a sulfur mine and a population of Greek families,
Hannibal described to Bayoth with only a passing nod to the general.
You take that town with your Gauls and defend my rear, and you can keep all the profits from the mine, and from when you sell the occupants. By the end of summer, I'll be financially able to buy the land from you. We get to take this summer off from campaigning,
Bayoth said while rubbing a hand over the stubble on his chin.
And keep the profits. That's correct, Colonel,
Hannibal informed him.
It's very generous, sir,
Bayoth agreed.
We'll leave tomorrow.
Excellent. General Hamilcar will see that you have all the provisions and wagons you require,
Hannibal promised.
Good luck, Colonel Bayoth.
The Gaul marched to the stairs and quickly vanished from sight.
We're going to attack Chanchana, Hamilcar inquired, and retake Agrigento.
Of course not,
Admiral Hannibal Gisco replied. Then to Boodes he requested,
send messages to our agents in Syracuse, Messina, Region, and Segesta. I want to know what the Republic commanders plan for this summer before they do.
Yes, sir, the fleet lieutenant acknowledged. Will there be anything else, Admiral?
General Hamilcar, before you get the Gaul his supplies, check to make sure we aren't giving him our best. I'm afraid you will not be getting the wagons back,
Hannibal Gisco advised.
And Boodes, find 2 likely defectors and send them to me. I have a special mission for them.
Chapter 2 Siege at Marianopoli. The hoplite half-heartedly swung the Xiphos. In response, the Legion Gladius slammed into the hoplite's sword, driving the rank leader to his knees.
Buffs! We're here to demonstrate a hero!
Alerio Cicero scolded while withdrawing the Gladius and stepping back.
How can we draw out Marianopoli's champion if you are dancing and not fighting? For a month you have stood in front of these gates and dueled with soldiers from Centuripe, Catania, Messina, and other cities,
rank leader Barves stated. He rose, shook out his sword arm, and tapped his helmet with the blade to straighten the headgear.
Now you're working your way through us Syracusans. It's apparent Marianopoli isn't impressed with me,
Alerio explained.
Maybe someone will beat me and the city will decide the new champion is worthy. Has it occurred to you that the city hasn't sent out a champion to fight because they don't have a champion worthy of you?
The Locagos advised.
Common sense dictates that a man does not voluntarily fight a minotaur.
Although well-traveled, thanks to the Legion, Centurion Sisera had never heard of the man Minotaur.
Who? Alerio asked. Is he a Greek champion? It's a creature, part man and part bull,
Barbs explained.
The beast lived in the labyrinth of Crete before the Athenian hero Theseus killed it.
If the hero Theseus killed it, Alerio ventured, then a man can fight the beast.
That centurion Sisera was not the point, Barves offered. The managers of Marianopoli are not sending anyone out for single combat because they are afraid of you.
Alerio glanced up at the stone walls. They were lined with city defenders eating and drinking. It seemed the gathering on the walls, as well as the men in the field around him, were there for the same reason. Entertainment. A rare commodity in a military camp, especially a siege bivouac. While not permanent, the besieging units were in place for an extended period, but without a town for distraction. The entertainment establishments, the pubs and restaurants were behind the city's wall. While the Legion commanders had strategic reasons for the siege, for the average soldier, capturing a city meant wine, beer, gambling, and serving girls.
We seem to have drawn a crowd,
Alerio suggested to the hoplite file leader.
Let's put on a show.
Barves rotated the blade of his Xiphos, and while it twirled, he stutter-stepped to the right. In a surprise attack, he pivoted and leaped forward. Leaning his body forward, he swiped his blade from knee height, bringing the tip up towards the Legion officer's hip. The Greeks and the allied forces around them yelled their approval. They may be politically united with the Republic, but most didn't care for the arrogant Legion tribune in charge, his centurions, or the legionaries. To see a phalanx rank leader put a centurion in the dirt would bring joy to their hearts. Except, Barves unintendedly announced his target by fixing the area of attack with his eyes. While his body went off to the side, Alerio was able to anticipate the follow-up moves by watching where the Syracusan focused. As the blade traveled from below waist level, the Legion weapons instructor tossed his gladius from his right hand to his left. Rather than stepping back, Alerio's blade came across and smashed the hoplite's sword off the attack line. Stepping forward, the centurion laid a forearm blow across Barv's chest. The hoplite staggered back and fell into the arms of his men.
"Can we begin again?" Alerio questioned. "Maybe start at the guard position this time."
With encouragement from his rank, Barves strolled back to the weapons instructor and raised his blade. Before Alerio could meet the guard, a runner jogged up.
"Sir, Tribune Caecilius requests your presence at the command center," a legionary announced.
"I apologize, Locargos Barves," Alerio stated while sheathing his gladius. "Duty calls."
"Saved you the embarrassment,"
a voice called from back in the pack of Greeks. Barves shrugged and offered a weak smile in response to the remark.
"We will take this up at another time, rank leader," Centurion Sisera promised.
Then Alerio walked away with the runner, and Barves marched to his ranks of hoplites to threaten the man who spoke out.
"It's one thing to try a feint and fail," he informed the mouthy Greek. "It is something entirely different to insult a Minotaur before the next fight."
Alerio marched into the command area. Just like the rest of the legion and allied positions around Marianopoli, the headquarters was a collection of roughly constructed huts supplemented by tents. Unfortunately, they were built to keep the rain and wind off the men rather than to provide comfortable living accommodations. Siege bivouac made for unpleasant working conditions.
"You wanted to see me, sir?" Alerio asked with a salute.
Tribune Gaius Caecilius stood outside a tent and plank structure, gazing at the sky. In the absence of an elected consul general, the senior tribune was the acting commander of Republic forces in Sicilia. Even with former consul Lucius Flaccus wintering in Messina, all decisions for the divided Winter Legion fell to Gaius Caecilius.
"Does Fortuna drop her gifts from the sky?"
the tribune inquired. Alerio flashed back to a disaster outside the city of Messina. During a final stand, the combat line of the Sons of Mars militia broke. Knocked onto his back during the rout, Alerio expected to see hoplites and spears close in on him. To his surprise and disgust, a pair of hobnailed boots bracketed his head, and he could see up a legionary's armored skirt. Shifting his head, he saw an optio backlit by the sky. Coming back to the present, he answered.
"In a battle line, Senior Tribune, heavy infantrymen find luck everywhere," Alerio assured him. "Why the question?"
"Come with me, Centurion," Gaius Caecilius ordered. "I want to get your untainted opinion."
The staff officer guided them off the street and through a tent flap. On one side of the room, the tribune's staff and the first centurion were huddled around a table, discussing something. On the other side of the wooden structure, two men sat sipping vino. Both had on worn leather armor and patched-up sandals. A quick glance back in the direction of the staff officers revealed two old pitted swords and two honed and buffed hunting knives on the tabletop.
"Sir?"
Alerio inquired. The senior tribune indicated the two men.
"Talk with them, and you tell me," Gaius Caecilius instructed.
"Soldiers, I would guess,"
Alerio offered as he approached the men.
"Where are you from?"
"Brindisi, Captain,"
one replied, using an Empire officer's title to address the centurion.
"And we want to go home."
"Nice city,"
Alerio commented.
"You know it?" the other inquired.
"Enough to know that a couple of rebels like you probably left there for glory," Alerio remarked.
"So what happened?" "The Kart Adash Empire only cares for landed farmers and chiefs who can provide mercenaries,"
the first soldier described.
"Found out a heart full of hate for the Republic didn't get you anything except a position in the light infantry," Alerio guessed. "Why are you here in the middle of Sicilia?"
Brindisi is to the east.
We don't have travel coins, the other soldier admitted.
Stop by to steal from us to pay for your passage, Alario challenged.
No, Captain, they both exclaimed. We have information to sell.
We know the fleet and the Empire's army are wintering at Palermo, Alario tossed out. And we know the names of Admiral Gisco and General Hamilcar. What could you possibly have that has value to the Republic?
The Gaul mercenaries are moving south, one soldier stated. That's worth some coins.
It might be, Alario commented. Depends on how many and where they're headed.
900 heavy infantry and 600 light, the other captive informed him.
Alario glanced over his shoulder at the tribune and wrinkled his face, as if asking a question.
We've sent out scouts to pick up their track, the Legion field commander assured Alario.
Turning back to the soldiers, Centurion Sisera related,
We have 5,000 allied troops here. What do the Gauls think they can accomplish, besides running our siege line and joining the hungry in the city?
It's not Marianopoli that they're targeting, Captain,
one of the Brindisians specified.
They're going for Cianciana.
Where is that? Alario demanded.
Junior Tribune Georgius from the other side of the room began.
Cianciana is...
Alario's hand shot up to silence the young nobleman.
Please, Tribune, allow the deserter to answer,
Alario requested. Then, to the soldier, he asked again.
Where is Cianciana?
Well, Captain, it's 16 miles northwest of Agrigento, the other replied. It is the back door to the walled city of Agrigento.
Alario laughed, causing every head in the building to turn in his direction.
Tribune Caecilius, you asked for my advice, Alario declared.
The senior tribune bowed his head to signify agreement.
Crucify these two and send a force to Cianciana.
You have been counted on the I believe them side of the ledger, Tribune Caecilius informed Alario. But you are the first of my staff to advise execution. Can you justify that?
These two Brindisian wharf rats don't need coins to get home,
Alario explained.
The city's network of Greek rebels would get them home for the propaganda value. Plus, these alleyway heroes know too many details.
How do you figure that?
Junior Tribune Georgius questioned. Alario wondered if young nobleman Georgius was on the I believe them side or the I don't believe them column of the ledger.
Cianciana is to the northwest of Agrigento at exactly 16 miles. But it's not the back door. On our march across Sicilia, we traveled south of the town, Alario responded. And the division of the Gauls at 900 heavy and 600 light is also too exact. Plus, the hunting knives are well cared for, but their swords are barely scraped of rust and freshly oiled. Any man who lives by the blade would tend both of his. Their swords have been switched out, as well as their footwear. In my opinion, your captures were ordered here to deliver the information.
The first centurion slammed his heels together.
Tribune, let me put them up on the wood. I'll soon have the truth for you.
First centurion,
do it, Gaius Caecilius ordered. Then he instructed. Centurion Sisera, accompany me to my quarters. The tribune crossed the floor of his tent and stopped at a table with a model of Marianopoli. Placing the tip of his little finger on the mark for his headquarters, he stretched his hand until the thumb reached to a point westward and at the edge of the map.
18 miles to Cianciana, Gaius Caecilius proclaimed. I cannot have an enemy force that close. It needs to be removed.
I'm guessing you've kept this siege going in order to train our allies,
Alario ventured.
Here's your chance to give the auxiliary forces some tactical experience, sir.
If I had the time, Centurion,
I'd send a message to Segesta and march 12 centuries down to handle the Chanchana situation, the Tribune remarked. I can't trust our allies to hold a battle line. Although the Syracusan hoplites are good troops, their commanders are timid, and the rest of our allies can't be trusted to stay awake on watch.
Give me 1,000 heavy and 1,000 light, Senior Tribune, Alerio offered. I'll use the Gauls to sort out the uncommitted, and maybe demonstrate to the surviving allies the value of Legion maneuvers and discipline.
I can't spare that many troops, the Tribune warned. But if you want the assignment, I'll see what I can get you.
Whatever assets you can give me, sir, Alerio informed the staff officer. If you'll excuse me.
Get those Gauls off my back door stoop, Tribune Gaius Caecilius instructed. Good luck, Centurion Sisera. May the Goddess Victoria travel with you.
Chapter 3 Auxiliaries versus Mercenaries. The higher elevations were covered with scrub pines and rocky ground. In the valleys, a variety of trees and winter grasses offered a competing environment. The two appeared to be from different parts of Sicilia rather than simply a matter of elevation. Also different were the attitudes of the officers in Alerio Sisera's detachment. A Syracusan officer guided a phalanx of 64 hoplites, while a centurion directed 80 legionaries in a century. Except here, there were no centuries of Republic heavy infantrymen. The role was filled by four phalanxes managed by four lieutenants. Selected for their size and family connections, the Syracusan officers marched at the tail end of the phalanx and made sure the ranks didn't retreat in combat. In bivouac, the officers clustered with each other and debated everything.
It's not much of a town, Lieutenant Homerus declared. But once we empty a few homes, we'll have plenty of room for our officers' quarters.
Unfortunately, in this instance, the other three Syracusan lieutenants agreed. Chanchana wasn't a large town. Most of the buildings were away from the center and consisted of warehouses for breaking up sulfur for transport or for slaughtering meat and processing fish. Only a few streets were paved. The rest were dirt paths pounded hard by decades of livestock, farm carts, fishermen, and miners. Access to the sulfur mine required the location of the town to be on the northern end of the Platani River Valley.
That will put you away from your men, Alerio suggested upon hearing the Greek officer's plan. He held his tongue and true thoughts.
A Syracusan officer requires proper quarters, another of the lieutenants remarked.
The last thing Alerio needed was the auxiliary forces going to war with him before the Gauls arrived. It might be difficult, but he had to find a way to convince the Syracusan officers to camp near their men.
Optio, find us a campsite on the east of town, Alerio directed.
There's a flat stretch of ground about halfway to the river, Centurion, Sergeant Miravi replied. That'll put us about 3,000 feet from Chanchana.
What about fresh water? Alerio inquired.
We'll trench a flow to our camp from the river, sir, the NCO replied.
Latrines? Alerio inquired.
They will be placed downstream of our drinking water, the Optio responded.
None of the questions were necessary, as the Legion NCO knew how to organize a camp. By asking, Alerio hoped to show the Syracusan officers examples of leadership. Unfortunately, it didn't work.
Sounds as if you have everything under control, Centurion, one of the four Greek officers commented.
The lieutenants and their servants strolled away, and Alerio squeezed his fists. Having marched 18 miles over 2 days through rough terrain, the hoplites, the other allied soldiers, and Alerio were exhausted. Seeing the phalanx officers walking away as if they didn't have a care in the world almost got the better of Alerio.
Anything else, Centurion Sisera? The Optio asked.
Four crosses,
Ilario mumbled without thinking.
Sir?
The sergeant inquired.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?